Welcome to this episode of A Kiss is Just a Kiss, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I'm one of your Lopez lovers, Kyle, joined by my co-host, Tim. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. I'm happy to be here and, as always, talk some George Lopez.
Always so excited to talk George Lopez with you. Everything's going well with you, Tim? Everything's good?
Yeah, we're watching Nick at Night at 4 in the morning.
Sorry, Tim. That was, I got some bad news for you today, bud.
We're not going to have time to talk about George Lopez.
No. We're not going to be able to talk about the episode of George Lopez, where as a birthday surprise for Angie, George arranges for her father, Vic, and her sister, Gloria, to visit. Upset about her upcoming divorce and jealous of her sister's marriage to a good man, Gloria makes an inappropriate advance towards George, which Max witnesses. I think is the kid. I don't remember. We should have a good episode. I'm very excited about it. We're going to be talking about the first volume of Not Alone, and we're joined by the creator. Who are we joined by, Tim?
Sophocles Sabonis.
Yes, that is me. Hello. How's it going?
Nailed it.
Good.
Yeah.
You did. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut that out completely, and I'm just going to make it sound like I said it. Coming from my job. Yes, very excited to talk about this for many, many reasons. I guess first, I always hate to avoid to like, what is it about or something like that. But for anyone not aware, like, how did this story come about? I know, like, obviously interested in kind of the, like, do-it-yourself mentality that you've taken to writing a graphic novel and the approach to that. But for, like, a story that's kind of long-running and vast, like, your approach with Not Alone, like, how did that come about that was kind of the story you wanted to set out to tell early on?
It's so weird because the whole process of, like, building and shaping it, it took, like, an amount of time, you know? I'm pretty sure it kind of feels like a montage, like, in a movie where I'm just sitting on a couch for 6 months and, like, I'm just, like, things are happening around me and I'm just, like, just sitting on the couch just thinking, because that's kind of what it felt like. I would just, like, sit on the couch and just think of, like, what is this about and, like, who's in it and, like, why am I even doing this and what does this mean to me and, like, what should I write about? And I just, like, there were these inklings of all these things that I always wanted to do, you know, like, I always wanted to do, like, a buddy adventure comedy or, like, things like that, you mm-hmm. know, and I was just kind of toying with the things that I always wanted to do, like, the kinds and genres and, like, sort of that kind of vision. Like, you know, I was thinking about the other day, I was like, oh, it'd be fun to write a movie, and it's like, okay, well, what kind of movie are you writing? It's like, is it a horror? Is it a this? Is it a that? So there's always, like, problem solving on all fronts at the same time. So it's like, I'll spend 5 minutes thinking about, like, you know, the title and, like, 2 minutes thinking about, like, oh, like, you know, who are the main characters? And it just kind of slowly started to form. But one of the bigger things that was, like, that played a role in it was these stress dreams that I had when I first moved to the States. They started off as just, like, a zombie-like nightmare. But then I realized that they were happening, like, you know, within, like, months of each other, sometimes within, like, weeks of each other. It could have been, like, a year and a half sometimes, but, like, it was the same universe. It's just a different episode of, like, the same sort of, like, you know, movie or scenario going on. And, you know, one time, like, you're just caught in a cab. The other time, it's, like, you're in a school trying to, like, get out, or, like, another time was a house party and, like, it was the beginning of it all. And it's like, so throughout this whole time, like, I was having those dreams or just, like, remembering those dreams. And I was, like, very into just, like, at the time also, I was like, what is art, you know? And, like, what is all this and what does it mean? And, you know, on one hand, it felt like this sort of exorcism, you know, like, the more I wrote about it, the more I started to, like, make it about zombies, the more it seemed to just kind of, like, flow. And then the dreams just started stopping too. And I don't know if it was just, like, me kind of, like, you know, getting online with, you know, like, my transition from dreamer to doer or whatever, because, like, there's that weird sort of, like, anxiety that you have, or at least that I had, you know, in the beginning. It's like, I knew that I needed to do something or that I wanted to do something. I just didn't know what. And so once I started, like, so I, like, if there were stress dreams, it might just been just, like, incredible stress about everything, you know, not just, like, my move, but just, like, you know, who am I and what am I doing? And so the moment I started just kind of, like, actualizing on the story and the series, like, those dreams went away. I don't think I've had a zombie nightmare in, like, a long time. So yeah, that's kind of like where the zombies came in and like that whole like story of it. But then the rest of the meandering and like the length of it, I think was because, I don't know, the more I built it out, the more I realized that it had to be just like, it wouldn't fit in one book. It wouldn't fit. It like, maybe you could fit it into a movie. I don't know like how that would work yet. But yeah, I couldn't see it fitting into like one book or 20 pages.
Well, I think that's what's so interesting and engaging about it. Because obviously, I mean, it's set in this zombie universe, like kind of post-apocalyptic or post-event universe. And while they're obviously a threat in instances, like it's interesting because it is like this buddy comedy adventure, like look at kind of almost slice of life set within it. And like, I mean, obviously, like I think people think of, you know, the most famous ones like The Walking Dead or anything like that, where there's the tinge of like humanity's bad or like all type of stuff. And obviously like the horror or the I think dread is there in the sense of the zombies, but that's kind of, the story is more about like these two characters and their relationship. And it's so interesting to kind of have that spin on it. And it allows for like the longer narrative, because like generally like there's like, you know, pages and pages go by where it's just these two interacting. And it's, I think I find that more engaging and fun and like just interesting to read as you kind of meet these two in this world.
Oh, hey, that's cool, man. That's nice to hear. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the goal too, because journeying and adventuring is kind of all part of this, and just like I think in life in general. And that was kind of what I looked forward to, almost like whenever I would hang out with my friends or I was on an adventure where I didn't know what was happening like in the next 30 minutes. It was those moments of togetherness with other people who I was like going through this thing with that stood out at the end, like the random jokes, the conversations, sometimes even the silence, you know, just walking with that person and like experiencing this event together, you know. And so while it, you know, yeah, it was funny to like hitchhike like my way through like, you know, like a mountain or whatever, but I just remember mostly like the times just walking with my friend, like side by side. So, and then like, you know, the events would happen and they'd be cool and they'd be fun, but then still what was in my head the most was just those times in between those events.
For you, as someone coming to this kind of, at least early on when you were approaching this book and tackling not only again this larger story, but obviously again this very character driven story, like I why it works so well is I think these characters are relatable. I think the interactions are very believable and kind of grounded in the sense that they feel like, again, realer interactions and less like Josh Whedon-y, like Buffy back, like while those things are there, like this feels like more like, I've always said, I've talked to, like, I have a younger brother and he'll always ask kind of like, because I'm you know, I'm married and he's like way younger than me, he's 17, so like conversation with that, and like I was like, I know, like I knew the relationship with my wife worked because we can sit in the same room for like 2 hours and not talk, like we're both reading or watching a movie, and like I love that, like I love like that you don't have to have this conversation, those like moments are filled. How was it to try and like get those types of relationships or that kind of the nuance that you get with these two characters as a writer, and again kind of someone coming to it again with very like early on, like learning this as you go?
Yeah, I script first and foremost. That's what I do. I just write out the whole thing. The first book was way too detailed. I was doing things like camera angles and this and that and expressions and like gestures. And this time, the second time around, I let it a little bit more up to me. But the dialogue was still something that was there first and foremost. Like I work on that, I think, the most as I'm writing the script. Like I can change maybe some other things, like the flow or the page, but the dialogue is almost concrete. But then sometimes, you know, when I go back and look at it, like I already draft it like a bunch of times before I think I'm done with the script, but then as I'm drawing it, sometimes some things are like, ah, I could say this differently, or like I think this is, I can say this more naturally, you know. So there's always like mini refinements, but for the most part, most of the work is done in script. So yeah, like I know that that's a thing, like forced banter and like too much banter, or like just banter and just quips, and like I don't like that kind of stuff either. And I always wanted to have a more sort of like natural feeling like dialogue, and what I kind of like to do is to just, I just talk it out sometimes, like out loud. Like, does it sound weird, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of like take it from there. And I don't know if, you know, I've just been lucky enough to like, I don't know. I either have had enough conversations to kind of know some of these nuances, or just watched too many movies, read too many books, you know, to know like when something feels off or not, you know?
Yeah, and I think one thing I saw that was interesting is, at least when I saw like some of your process on Instagram, you were posting that you were like lettering before you even kind of like put down all the inks, which I thought was interesting again, because like the story is so much sold on kind of the dialogue between these two. And obviously there's like great action, but I thought that was interesting kind of approach to making sure you got lettering and the bubbles down, and then kind of working around that.
Ooh. I didn't know that was strange. Yeah, I just always thought, because like that's the important part, at least for me, or at least like just the placement of the words, because I got burned in the beginning. I would write these like long sentences out that would not fit. And so I was just like, oh boy. So this, I always had to test dialogue in the panel first. And then when I was sure that like that's how long it was, that's the size of the bubble, boom, that's in. And then the drawing can come after that, like around it or whatever. Sometimes I do it the other way around, like I'll have like the splash page and it doesn't matter where the bubbles are, but if like it matters, because I'll use them too sometimes to guide the eye, because like it's just a weird format too, like even in the beginning, just trying to figure out like how to pace it, I was relying like a lot on the bubbles too, to just kind of move the eye. So yeah, I guess to me that's the most important part, what you put down first.
You mentioned kind of the format and the approach of a more like kind of widescreen format. Was that something early on you knew you wanted to do for a reason, or more comfortable, or obviously kind of if you posted online, was there a reason you wanted to kind of do the like wider format, at least for pages?
Yeah, 100%. That was my compromise. I didn't know. It was like novel or movie. And then I just like, I reread Scott Pilgrim and it just fucking clicked. I was like, okay, I'm making a graphic novel. But the compromise is that it's going to be widescreen like a movie, and it's going to be like super cinematic. And that was basically the impetus for that.
Has that worked, at least? What has that experience been like? Kind of, do you feel like that gives you more room to kind of play around with dynamicism, or like providing that cinematic feel to it?
So the biggest obstacle that I ran into was that there was no one to rip off of. There was very few examples, and if I wanted to dig for them, like my comic book shops aren't like the deepest, or like, you know, sometimes you might run into some weird like self-published ones or widescreen ones, but I just was not finding like almost anything. And I don't think it made anything easier. I think it just made everything harder, but that was like, I just went like, that was it, you know, it's either that or no project sort of. So I was excited to do it and to figure it out. And I kind of wanted there to be like this sense of movement, like there is in a movie. And so like, it's always going towards the next page, if that makes any sense. Like it's always like motion towards the right, sort of. It was an experiment for me too. I was trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I can only think of, looking at my shelf, I think of this Grand Abyss Hotel. I have The Private Eye, and I think Black Hand were ones that are at least kind of in the wider screen format.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're, I love them.
You don't have Frank Miller's Masterpiece 300?
I don't have 300 or Xerxes.
That's an interesting one. Oh, wow, Grand Abyss Hotel. I had not known about this.
But I love them. But as a weirdo with tons of bookshelves, I'm like, oh, these are sticking out on my shelves.
And, yeah, I know.
But I do love, Wes Craig's Black Hand. Like that's something where he's been able to kind of experiment with that format, and he's done a lot with the style of storytelling in it. And again, I think whether or not like the challenges there, I'm reading Not Alone, like you see like kind of the difference you're able to play with in it. I like a lot of the like either the full screen pages and then kind of the progression you can have in it within the panels in it. Like, there is some playability in there, and I like the approach kind of that this has been able to provide for Not Alone.
Oh yeah, thank you. That's I've been so, that was always like one of the biggest things for me. And Black Hand, Wes Craig has always been like this huge inspiration for me. And yeah, I definitely was like looking at Black Hand, just trying to like, cause it still wasn't the same format. Like, yeah, it was more widescreen and he was playing around and I really like how he does it. And I was definitely like looking at some of those things to just kind of be like, ooh, okay, yeah. Like that's, because it's atypical as well. But then I'm just not that good of an artist. so then like I was just trying to figure out like just within my means. And yeah, so I was very conscious. I still am conscious about like just how will it move? How will the reader know where to look, where to go next? And I know that like I tripped up a couple of times, a bunch of times and whatnot. But, you know, that's the process.
Well, and I mean, anyone maybe that's not aware and hasn't read tons of interviews like I do for my research and then makes me self-conscious when I do interviews. I know like pretty much self-taught in your approach to art and tackling a graphic novel. And how has that, like tackling a graphic novel and then doing it, has it allowed you kind of experiment more as you go? Like I think even in the story, like, early on you do some like fourth wall stuff and you like do things like that. And then like later on, again, there's like different ways you kind of play with panels and like you will just like kind of experiment throughout it. And like, I really love like reading it that way and kind of seeing like what you're doing as you're going. Is that something you're conscious of as you're writing and kind of trying different things out? Does it happen like in the script for you, or are you doing that kind of on the page front?
Yeah, that all kind of happens on the page front because like I might have tweaks and, you know, workflow things to work on for the script, and I'll work those in the script and like some things like that. But that was mostly just in prep for the drawing. And then when I'm drawing, yeah, it's both conscious and like unconscious at the same time. It's like I'm not trying to experiment. It's just like, you know, I'll be drawing and then I just find something that works better or that's just like kind of more interesting than what I did like 5 pages ago. And yeah, that whole thing, like the whole process, that's intentional because I just know that like there's no other way. Like it's like I'm chronicling myself from zero. Not really, but like sort of, you know? And so I'm not like, what's that word? I'm not like a monolithic artist that has a set style or like that was like already, you know, just kind of like, this is how I draw and this is how I do what I do. This is my style. I'm still just kind of making it up and just trying new things. And yeah, there's a lot of experimentation and it's kind of like the nature of the beast, but it is also intentional at the same time. Like it's an aesthetic choice as well, like to show that. Like I could just, you know, practice for 10 years, not tell anyone and then like write a book that's very consistent and very like, you know, but I kind of wanted this too.
And that, I mean, so anyone, I think that's interesting because that is like one of the, I think, hardest things for people. And often the appeal of comics, when I'll talk to people about it, is like, there's such a wide range of styles and tones and approaches. And if you have a good story or you have something you want to say, you know, whether or not you're like Frank Quitely or, you know, like Brian O'Malley, like there's those things are there, like you can do it. It's more just like being able to do it and like kind of taking that first step is really difficult for you. Like at what point did you feel comfortable enough to start putting it on paper, like the actual process, the story, and then start kind of getting it together and eventually kind of submitting it? Was there like a point you felt comfortable enough or are you still not even there and just it's just like doing it and doing it?
It fluctuates. Like even now I'm just kind of like, yeah, I don't know what I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know like how to draw, like what do I like, yeah, I'll think about the third, actually the second book I was kind of dreading it. I was like, oh boy, like here we go again, can I do it, can I pull it off like I did it the first time, it almost killed me, like can I do it again? And now for the third one, I think I have more confidence in just kind of just sitting down and starting. But even for the second one, it took a lot for me to like get back and sit back down and start drawing it again. And the first time, that's a kind of a funny story, because there's a year gap between the first five pages and the rest of the book. I did the first five pages, like, I don't know how or why, I was just psyching myself up. I was like, okay, dude, like now's the time, like, you've done this, like, you've been tracing this, you've been drawing, you've been, you've been trying, like, just go for it, go for page one. And then I went for page one, and it took like 6 hours or something crazy like that. And it was just like a harrowing experience. I was just like, just sweating. I was like, I don't even know now. I was like, I didn't want to erase anything. And whereas now, I'm just like, erase, erase, erase. Like, even learning how to erase or allow yourself to erase and to like have that mistake, it's just, it feels so permanent sometimes too. Like, it's just the, what do I call it? Like, the, sometimes the lead won't come off the page. And you're just like, well, fuck, everyone's going to see that now. I can't erase it. Like, I just have to like keep it there. And there's this weird just drama of even putting down a line. It's just weird, constant like mental battle that I put myself through. And but after the first five, I was like, okay, I'm not ready. And so I practiced for like another year, just like just over and over the same things. And then after that, it was more just like, okay, I think you reached a point where you're not going to learn unless you just start doing it. Like, I was plateauing, and I knew that I had to work on my stuff to get better at my style, you know? And like, I couldn't keep, like, drawing other things or from life anymore. I just had to go.
Do you notice now, kind of working on the third installment of this, what do you think's kind of the biggest change for you in your approach? Do you notice kind of, like, looking back at those first pages, which are will be in the first volume that's coming out, like, are you able to tell kind of your biggest difference in your approach or style?
I can definitely like notice that I'm getting more confident. I can definitely tell that, like, if you, the first five pages, like, the characters are kind of like out of style too. And my friend was like, you got to redo them. And I was like, yeah, but no. And I don't know if I'll regret it, but I think, because yeah, they could look more like normal or whatever, or just like, but at the same time, that was just part of it. And even in book two, like, the second half of the book, it looks different from the first half of the book. And to me, like, I can't go back and fix that, because it's too much time, and it's too much, like, I'm trying to not be a perfectionist about this, and that's like a very hard thing for me to do in the first place. So I'm just having a good time just appreciating it, like, just kind of like, I mean, I don't have kids, but I assume, like, when you look at your kid, like, you see the before in your mind, like, of the baby and what you have in front of you now, and it's just like this thing that exists at both times. Like, I see, like, how I used to draw and how I draw now, even sometimes in the same book, and like, oh, that's precious, you know? Like, that's kind of like where I am with that, like, looking back. Sometimes it feels like, I just hope that, like, now that there's readers, and like, now that there's going to be like a gap between book one and book two, it's like, I promise, like, I got better. Like, if you wait for the second one, if you read the second one, I've gotten better than the first one, you know? So that's kind of like the attitude as far as that goes. Like, I just want people to know that, like, I am getting better. And like, if the first one looks kind of crappy or whatever, like, even if the first five pages look crappy, it just gets better.
And I think that is, like, it's such a hurdle for people. And, you know, even I know, like, that's something I have struggled with for, like, the longest time, is getting comfortable enough to, like, feel like this isn't, like, because you know how you want it to look, and you're like, this face isn't, like, I'll draw a face, and then I'll go to draw, like, a three-quarters, like, turn of it, and I'm like, this doesn't look the same, and I'm just like, all right, I gotta erase all of it. It's like, at some point, you just have to do it. And what's so amazing, I think, with this book too, is like, it doesn't, like, if you were to tell me there was someone that, when I was reading it, like, keep reminding me, like, oh, this is someone that's kind of self-taught and learning through it, like, it doesn't feel like it, because, like, again, I think what is so great about comics, I think, is if you have the story and you have the ideas, like, stuff works, like, the panels and the being able to kind of control the camera angle and all that stuff, like, if you have that kind of, you know, abstract thought process in your head, you're able to get it, whether or not, like, you can always do with the art, but you can kind of showcase it. And again, I think you do it extremely well. And I'm amazed at the lighting you pull off in this. Again, it's in black and white and kind of the grayscale with the washes, but like, there's a lot of like crazy lighting you approach, which is something I would be like, no thanks, I'm not gonna try that. I saw the stuff you're posting on Instagram with the party panels, and there's like the disco, like, yeah, that's fucking nuts, I wouldn't do that.
Oh, thanks, dude. Yeah, I don't know, like, I just know that that's important, and like, it, the only way that I can like make myself like, it's like, it's almost like hiding the fact that I can't draw with other things. So it's like, if you know, everyone, all the artists from back in the day were just obsessed with light, you know, like Da Vinci and Matisse, and like they were like studying, like they weren't just studying like how to draw, they were studying physics in the world, and like they were trying to figure out like what was going on in the first place, and like why is the sky blue, and like besides just like accurately getting that shade, they were thinking about like why is this blue and what makes it change. And so through their attempts at trying to like put down the real world through art, like they were breaking down like reality at the same time, and light was one of the biggest things. So I just like, that was one of those things I just try to like kind of learn and try to master, because even in black and white, it's like you don't have a lot of things going for you, so, but you do have light, and that's what like Mignola did well. Mignola, I don't know how you say it, the Frank Millers,
yes, all the that. Wrong people.
But yeah, and so like a lot of these a lot of the players that work in black and white and chiaroscuro or whatever, like that's a big part of it. So I tried to, whenever I could, to make sure that I put that in there. But yeah, man, thank you for that, because you know, it's I do care on one hand, and on the other hand I don't care, because exactly what you're saying, that's just kind of what I figured out, and what was bolstering me and just like kind of like picking me up was that it just really doesn't matter if you think the story is good, and I thought the story was good, because like I've seen comics are like that, like I don't want to talk down on people, but I saw a book that was at the comic store, and it was just doodles, like straight up, like I'm not saying that they weren't like, you know, cool doodles or good doodles, but it was literally like doodles. And then the same shop, I took my book there like years ago, be like, hey, would you guys like to carry this self-published thing? And they're like, thanks, but no thanks, it looks unfinished. And I'm like, how dare you, as a comics patron, say that it looks unfinished? Have you seen like what's on your shelves? Like, it was literally, like, I'm not saying like, you know, that there's that these are bad comics. I'm just saying like there's, you can't right. say that, you know? Like,
yeah.
There's so much out there with so much varying styles. There's comics with no words. There's comics that's like mostly words. There's comics that like marry both very well. There's comics that, you know, rely heavily on the strength of the dialogue. Some others, they really don't care about the dialogue. They just like, you know, colors and like superheroes and muscles and like, you know. So like, I had that going for me, and I kind of knew it at the time. Maybe it was like due to bitterness or pettiness. I was just like, if that's out, like, you know, then my well, thing. Like,
yeah, and I think, I mean, and it, I don't know if now kind of in the age of, I think, digital being more approachable, and then kind of Kickstarter's always been, at least in the realm of Kickstarter, comics has kind of been the big avenue for it, but specifically in the last year, there's a huge boom of it. And like, I know kind of with the like, you know, the normal big two readers, like that is shit. Like, I remember, I'm gonna fuck up, this is the name, is it a Greek name too? Fuck. Giannis Milogiannis.
It's Yanni Milogiannis.
All right, Tim. I'm going to drop him from the call.
It was a three-pointer from like half court. Like,
so yeah. he did an issue of, what was it? I don't know. It was like a young teen Marvel book. And I remember reading the comments on the time I did a review of it. And like, oh, this is like scratchy. Like, how did this? I was like, what the fuck? Like, you shut the fuck up. You don't know who you're talking about. This is the man who did Old City Blues. Like, and it was like, not like people in not understanding like the realm of that. Like, and now you see, like, you know, Ryan North did comics where it was just like cut and paste little dinosaurs, and like it was huge. And like, again, it's about the story. And like, obviously, like, if you want to be a filmmaker, it's tough because like you have to, you know, have a camera and put it on screen, and like there is that aspect to it. But like with comics, like, and with prose, you kind of merge the two and tell tell the story you want to tell, and you know, visually, as long as you're able to get it across, it works. So it's crazy that I think it's coming around a little, because you see, I think, more unique art in the big two, but like in the realm of indie, like I think it's always been the case that those like comics are comics.
Definitely, yeah, and that was the cool part of it. That was why I was just like, yeah, I can do this, or like I can try to do this.
And I know, like, originally you had it online. How did it come about getting, like, what was the process for it coming out now through BHC Press? Like, what was that, again, kind of doing this all yourself, what was that process like of actually getting it published?
Oh, man, it's like, I can't, it's so weird. It's like, it literally feels like all that just kind of ended as I ended book two, because, like, I was still just kind of sort of in that weird panic mode. Like, I have, like, I never really felt like some sort of pencils down moment, you know, and I think that happened to me like 2 months ago. So it was always just rolling with it, just rolling with the punches and trying to just like figure out what was the best bang for buck, you know, because like that's all I have is time and possibly money here and there, you know, like, so I have to figure out like what's the best avenue for that. Like, should I put my time and money into this being a webcomic? But I was like, this isn't a webcomic. I didn't want it to be a webcomic. It'd be cool if it were also hosted, you know, like, hey, you can't afford the book, go read it online. But like, I always first and foremost wanted this to be a book. I wanted it to be physical. I wanted it to be held. And just the format, like when I first got the first, like the test publish, the self-published back, it was so fucking perfect and cool, and like it worked. And I was like, this is so crazy. It took me 6 years just for proof of concept, but like it just worked so much better as a book. And at the time, I was having some difficulties with the web host. You know, just it's weird working with people online, and it's weird working through online, like even when it wasn't the norm, like back then, just people just straight up would ghost and like not communicate. And like, I don't even know if I was being overbearing or asking for too much, or like, I don't know, but I was like, dude, this isn't working. Can you please like fix it? And it was never fixed. And then it was just like a disappointment of a website in the first place. So it just expired. And I was like, fuck it, I don't care. I'm just going to just push forward with trying to get this printed somehow, either myself, Kickstarter, publisher. So that was kind of like what happened with that.
I mean, how is that? We're recording this a little over a month, maybe a little. I'm not good at time and math. For this coming out, like, in stores, like, yeah, you can get it on like Barnes and Noble, and there's like an Amazon list, like, and I remember I was reading like in prep like an interview you did in like 2018 or something, and you had like put it online, and like for you when that time comes, like it getting in stores and getting people hands, like what is that like for you now, especially something so again you're kind of working on book three and this is book one coming out, like what is that experience for, like, you knowing that it's coming out in a little over a month, like, physically for people to read?
It's a weird sort of, like, you know, it sounds weird, but it's almost like an about time sort of, like, feeling. Like, this should have happened. Not because, like, it's so good that it should have been out, but, like, it just feels like it should have been out, like, you know, at least a couple years ago or something like that. Just because of, like, how long this whole thing took, you know, from conception to getting it on shelves. And I do not want to like minimize this in any way. But like you said, I'm already on three. So it kind of never mattered in the first place, you know, like either it was going to be on shelves or it wasn't. I'm still working on three, you know? So it's a big bonus. It's a big plus. Now it's like kind of like where I feel like, okay, like you're kind of getting what you wanted, and what I wanted was just feedback. I wanted like feedback from people that like comics and are nerds and like stories and zombies, and like I want to see, like, because like, you know, this is also a gamble, like a pretentious gamble in the first place. Like, I can write a better zombie story than so and so, you know, or like all this zombie stuff is crap, like I can write better. But you know, it's not that that's how I was thinking, but it's also like at the same time, you know, I wasn't impressed with like a lot of the zombie stuff that I was seeing, and I wasn't seeing the stories that I wanted to see, and that's kind of like half of the battle of DIY art or punk rock art, is just like if you don't see it, it kind of means that you have to do it, or like you just make it for yourself, because you know, you're like I laugh at this book, you know, I'm entertaining myself at the same time, you know, like when I read it, like when I finish the whole book and then like I get to read it, it's when I read my book, it's entertaining, you know. I was like, oh yeah, that's funny, like haha, like I wrote that joke because it's funny to me, you know.
Well, I think that's like humor, especially in comics, is hard to pull off based on like timing and all that stuff and kind of the control readers have, but I feel like it always works in books. You can tell that like the creator is generally writing to humor themselves versus like what works for humor, and like you get a lot of that. Like you can kind of tell your personality in the book, kind of the humor wise. Again, reading it and like feels it's. I think again with humor, getting genuine humor versus kind of like forced what is going to work on a page to a like test group versus like what is actually funny to me. It makes me laugh.
Yeah, it's a trip. Comedy is a whole other just trip on its own. One of my favorite books is On Laughter by Henri Bergson, who's a French philosopher, and that just, yeah, I don't know. I think laughter and comedy are just, if anything, is the existence of the divine or God or any sort of like, you know, benevolent being besides love. Like laughter is literally like what we have to maintain any sort of like sanity in this world, I feel like, anyways. And so
yeah. Okay.
I respect comedy like a lot, and I always try to think about it, what it means to me, what it means to people. But there's always like that part of like, well, I'm not so special, and if it's funny to me, it's gonna be funny to at least like a couple of other hundred people, so like that's enough, you know, that we're it works. But at the same time, I do try to like take comedy seriously as well, you know, like yes, this is funny to me, but then like I dig into it, like why is it funny to me, and like what is slapstick, what is like the essence of slapstick, what is the essence of like irony and dark humor, and like what is it all about? It's like, is it fear, is it absurd, you know? So I have the concepts and all that stuff in my head, but then yeah, it also is just as innocent as just me just amusing myself.
I mean, you're on a podcast that knows comedy because it's a George Lopez podcast.
Occasionally comes. So we know all about it.
For anyone that has read this either previously digitally or is going to pick it up and read it, what, again, kind of being farther in the story, and the book kind of, book one kind of obviously ending on a cliffhanger, what can you tell me? I was referencing that interview you did in like 2018, and you said at the time you were into Inio Asano, and I was like, oh shit, this book's gonna get dark. What can you expect readers, or what can readers expect kind of if picking this up and like wanting to know more about like what's down the road for these characters? Well, again, they're unnamed, right? Like I've reread the first one like a bunch of times. It's not named, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, basically, it's like my name, right? And like my name trips me out sometimes too. And I use whatever I can to my advantage. And you know, I was always into like ancient tragedy, and you know, it's a tragic story. It's definitely like an ancient Greek tragedy in the sense that like as the story goes on, you understand that like, you know things that the heroes don't, and like all that stuff. Like you know, there's things that I pulled from tragedies, not just the content itself, but also like structures and whatnot. And it is a tragic story at the end of the day. It is kind of a dark and tragic story. However, it's also funny. And that's kind of like basically like the sort of the vibe of it, you know. It's like it's a tragicomedy, and there's a lot of life that happens like in between, and it'll never be like, I don't know if it'll ever leave you, you know, like Goodnight Poom Poom what did, you know, but like, and that's not the goal in the first place, but it is heavy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think well, even that itself, like I think Goodnight Poom Poom is, there's some level of humor in that. I just read I'm looking at it, Girl on the Shore, like literally like 3 days ago. I'm like, this book, I gotta fucking take a break from life. Jesus Christ, that one. It's good. But I think even as like a proof of concept, the first book, I think once you read it, like, and it ends, it's like, oh, well, all right. Like I instantly wanted more, which I think is, again, what you want. Like I said, I think even reading it, like, just like sitting with these characters as they make this and these have these conversations, and like it feels like you're like all along the ride on like in the backseat of like a car listening to like friends talk. And I think if anything, like you're able to pull that off is like an achievement in itself. Not only, again, I think artistically, I think there's amazing scenes in it. I think your approach to action is, again, for someone who this is like self-taught and learning along the way, I think is a fantastic approach that. So I'm excited for people to be able to pick it up and do it. And then obviously more excited that we'll get more of it down the road.
Thank you, dude. That makes me feel all warm and fuzzy, man. Thank you.
And that's, I set him up so Tim can ask his final question, because that's not a good question. It's a good one, Tim.
It sure is. All right.
Tim's on my bad side today.
All right, so I'm gonna say it, Sophocles, gun to your head. If you were forced to write one episode of Two and a Half Men, what would happen?
Whoa.
Again, peak of comedy, that word.
See, I haven't seen like enough of it to know what they've done yet or not, you know what I mean? But I think it'd be fun to do like a Fear and Loathing, Two and a Half Men.
Ooh, that would fit in perfect with that.
Yeah,
we haven't seen enough of it to know what they do.
But that hasn't been suggested yet, and that'd be pretty cool.
It would work with, you know, with fucking Tiger Blood and whatever Charlie Sheen's on, you know.
Yeah, man, the kid, the half man, just in the back seat.
Yeah,
whatever his name is,
Max.
That's George Lopez. But if anyone wants to know more about you or the book or follow along, what's the best way they could do that?
The Not Alone Instagram is a good place. Shoot me a DM. If you find me on the regular Instagram too, that's fine as well. Just, you know, just hit me up. I'm around. And you can, yeah, I don't know. I actually don't know like what a good answer to this kind of thing is. But for the most part, yeah, just it's Not Alone, N0T. .alone on Instagram. And
you're in the perfect place, because I don't remember ours ever. Tim, where are you?
I'm on Twitter, Instagram at Tim Madura, and I occasionally write about comics over at Comics.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, we're on at pages_panels, all that shit. Again, you didn't stumble upon this. Every other week we do the YouTube show covering the quote-unquote greatest comic book of all time that we read that week. You can join us live on there, and then it's up on the audio feed. I don't know. I hate doing this part. But most importantly is going and picking this up, be in shops, be in all your major book retailers, like I said, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And because I didn't meet the requirement, occasional mention that I occasionally work at Barnes & Noble once a week, I will sneakily shortlist this so we have it in the store. But that, again, is this episode. Again, I'm very excited for it to be out. Get a physical copy. I need that shit. I can't have PDFs on my computer. I need the physical stuff on the shelf. But yeah, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was, you know, I know how it's strange, like how interviews are kind of like one-sided, and I always feel bad not, you know, learning more about you guys too. It's just kind of like the nature of it.
It's not worth.
Yeah,
what's that?
That would be like a weekly show, just me and Tim talking. No one wants that.
I mean, I could talk about myself all the time, but that's
not why we're here.
Yeah. But yeah, man, yeah, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. And this was fun, and thank you for the nice words. And it's crazy to hear other people outside of the ones that I've, you know, built in my head talking about it. So,
oh, no problem. Again, anytime we can avoid talking George Lopez, which I promise Tim we'll do next episode.
I can't wait.
Thanks for joining. I will stop recording there.